Call the personnel meeting to order tonight on Tuesday, October the 10th. I don't have any special reports. Does any of the justices on the committee have any reports to give? Okay. We don't have any old business to go over, so we'll go straight to the new business. Just to get started, I'm going to talk for a second. We've got a couple joint resolutions that we're going to go through. These are standard like we saw in last month's meeting. These are raise requests trying to get folks in line where the managers feel they need to be. I did not get the stuff printed out tonight in hard copies, but emails were sent out to all the justices with the data for the salary surveys and what the managers and elected officials will be discussing tonight. And then we've got a few ordinances here, and the three ordinances are related to the personnel manual, and these are some changes that were requested, and we'll go over those a little bit after we get through these. And I guess just a few comments on the proposed resolutions for these raises, because this is something I've noticed last month and this month, and this is just food for thought for the court. But some of these raise requests, when they come in, I think the court's got to be cognizant of when they come in, does it throw off other offices? Does it align with other offices? Does it throw things out of whack, or does it make sense? And that's just something that we've got to look at, and I know that's something I've been working on. I mentioned that earlier in the year with the kind of getting the standardizations, the salary bands. Still working on that. It's been slower than I expected and hoped, but hopefully after the first of the year we can roll that out. But that's just something that I think the court's got to be cognizant of as we look at these raise requests. So we'll get started with proposed joint resolution 2302. I will take a motion to put that on the floor for discussion.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Got a motion and a second.
Who was the second?
Thank you. Just a shot. Okay, and this one was for the assessor. And this is basically, this is our cleanup ordinance, correct?
Well, it's a resolution, but it's cleanup because there was a typo regarding the amount requested on section
five.
There was a miscommunication. My side was correct, but what was on the website was not amended correctly, so we're just correcting that.
Okay. So this is when we approved the assessors last month. We looked at that. There was a typo, and it was incorrect on Section 5, so this is a cleanup to correct that one.
Get in your way.
Any questions from the justices on the committee?
The Section 5 change is the only change in this from last month?
Yes. Now, when I say that loosely, because if you'll notice, I have a signature for the personnel and then signatures for the budget and finance. And this was per discussion with Tyler, what he would wanted, because he's going to hear these in his meeting next. So, but the meat of it is the same.
Thank you, ma'am.
Any other questions from the committee? Any questions from our justices out in the audience? From the public? Okay. I will take a motion to send joint resolution 2302 for budget and finance for consideration.
So moved.
Do I have a second? Second. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. The ayes have it. 2302 is forwarded to budget and finance. Okay, so this is a new one here on 2307. I will take a motion to put 2307 on the floor for discussion.
Thank you.
Do I have a second?
Second.
We've got a motion and a second. Okay, so this one here, there was a few of our elected officials that weren't able to get their request in last month. I told them they could bring them this month. This one is from our treasurer, and I'll give it to you, Mr. Sanson.
Thank you. So this is kind of, this is partly my fault for not understanding the way we were doing appropriations last year. So I was under the understanding last year that we were going to do budget raise requests or cost of living. We did both. And I've got a deputy position that's left very far behind. You'll see there on the salary survey, there's not a whole lot of meat there in the numbers versus other deputies in other counties. But if you'll turn with me to page 2. The deputy of Faulkner County, county clerk at 52,000 does a lot of the same duties. Saline County has an accounts payable clerk, which is not necessarily in the treasurer's office, but in the comptroller's office. We're kind of quasi-comptroller of the county being how we work here. That average is 56, that's 60,000. The average is 56,133. I'm asking for 48,500. Trying to get my deputy kind of comparable to other deputies in the county and with other counties that are doing the same processes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sampson.
Are there any questions I can answer on any of that?
Does the committee have any questions?
In the last year or the year before, didn't we like put all of the chief deputies on pretty even keel?
Chiefs, yes.
We did.
This is a deputy. This is just a straight deputy.
So what's the difference there?
My chief deputy kind of runs my office. Everybody has a chief deputy, right? And then you might have, and you will have deputies, and some, depending on how big the office is, may have layers of different deputies, deputy one or deputy two. I have three full-time. Me, a chief deputy, and a deputy. That's my office.
Any other questions, Justice Allison? Thank you. Any of our other justices have any? Any justices in the audience? Any of the audience have any questions? Okay. I will take a motion to forward 2307 to Budget and Finance for consideration.
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. 2307 is forwarded to Budget and Finance. Okay, the next one we're going to look at is Resolution 2308 for the County Clerk. I'll take a motion to discuss Resolution 2308.
I'll make that motion.
We've got a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
We've got a motion and a second. Okay, this is for 2308. This is for our County Clerk's office. There's three sections here that we're looking at deputy clerks and Mr. Starter, I'll let you discuss it.
Just because y'all may not have these.
Thank you.
All right, if you don't mind, I'm going to go back to my seat.
Go ahead.
Okay, so as you can see by the salary survey, I listed out comparable employees with the counties that have similar positions, and the average was a little bit lower, but when you rule out some of the counties that do not have payroll or accounts payable in them, and then you bring in the comptroller's duties that are similar to what we would have as accounts payable and doing the payroll, then those salaries are at a much higher rate. And then when you factor them in, I am asking to bring two employees up to 48,000. Their title has backup payroll and backup accounts payable, but it takes two people to do accounts payable in my office anymore. And it's taking more than one person, about a person and a half to do payroll anymore. So every time the sheriff's office or another department brings an employee, that brings in more work on my side of the office as well. So I'm just asking to pay these comparable to what they would be paying in another county, and also bring them up a little closer to the step, I guess, be deputy clerk three, the level that's just above them. It kind of splits the difference in them. And I'll take any questions.
Does the committee have any questions for Mrs. Arter? And while the committee's sitting here thinking, I do want to say thank you to all the elected officials and managers for doing this last month, this month. This data helps us make decisions, and it's a lot of work on them and their office staff, but it's very helpful, so thank you all. Any justices in the audience have any questions? Any of the audience? Okay.
Yeah, I just want to point out too that I mean we look at this and we've done it for a while, but to anybody that may not know, when they separate out Sebastian, Craighead, and Saline, it's because the spread for Class 6 counties goes from a population of like 70,000 up to 200,000, a larger spread than almost any other classification. And so the salaries in Jefferson County, for instance, may not really be comparable for the duties that they're performing. And I think it's good to make note of that here. It may seem like we're getting a little maybe careless with raises and things, but if these employees are doing twice the work because we're in county twice the population, then I think that's justified.
It's a good point, Justice Allison. Faulkner is, we are a top Class 6 county, so that's why a lot of our elected officials and department heads, they'll bring the data for the Class 6s, and then they'll segregate it out for the top Class 6s to give us a different comparison so we can look at those. So definitely a good point. Okay, any other questions? Okay, I'll take a motion to forward Resolution 2308 to Budget and Finance for consideration.
So moved.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. 2308 is forwarded to Budget and Finance. Okay. And then our last resolution for the night is 2309. That's Circuit Court First Division. I will take a motion to put 2309 on the table for discussion.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
We got a motion and a second. Okay, this is for consideration for a law clerk position. We'll let Judge Weaver. Judge, you got the floor.
All right, thank you. I brought each of you a packet as well. If you checked your email, you'll notice that the attachments were many. One of the things that was said when we go. The population size of the counties for Class 6 really are hard to compare to Faulkner County because of the size. So what I did in the packet, if you'll look, my first letter explains what everything is. But we can change, go through these all if you like. But basically what I did is I looked at the other counties that are Class 6 that do not have law clerk positions. However, some of the folks that do are Pulaski County. I gave the numbers for the Pulaski County judges that hear the same type of cases that I do to show that the caseload in Faulkner County is actually exceeding the caseload in Pulaski County for the per judge. I also included in there Sebastian County, Pulaski County, Faulkner County. I can go through each one of these. I included a job description of what the law clerk does. Also in the proposed ordinance, it's asking to change, before I forget, the name of the law clerk, because that's, I think it was administrative support is what it used to be, and I wanted to accurately reflect what the position is, which is a law clerk. So the first graph that I gave you are the case numbers for First Division only, and then a projection for the case numbers for this year. And you can see that they're steadily going up. The second chart that I gave you are the divisions in Pulaski County who do have law clerks, full-time law clerks, and that's what I base my salary upon. And it also shows for the 16th and 17th divisions in Pulaski County. Those, like I said, those are similar to the same types of cases that I hear or that I hear and see. And you'll notice that these exceed, that First Division Faulkner County exceeds the numbers in both 16th and 17th division in Pulaski County. The next graph is Sebastian County, which is Division 7. They also hear the similar type of cases that I hear as well. And Faulkner County far exceeds their totals as well, despite them having the lower population. The next one is Saline County. And I did, again, the different divisions in Saline County. As you can tell, there was no division in Saline County that looked similar to the division that I covered here in Faulkner County, so I just did all of the divisions. As you will see, Faulkner County numbers are fairly larger than Saline County, and again, we have an upward trend in Faulkner County. The next page that I gave you is an Excel sheet, and it shows you the total cases per division here in Faulkner County. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And you'll notice in first division, which is again my division, I've got 5,677 cases. The next closest to me is 4,711. The next is, these are called Rule 41 docket filings. When I first got the law clerk, I had explained what Rule 41 was, and probably most of y'all are like me on things that just are not interesting. This is where it's a docket cleanup, so for every case that gets filed, somehow it's got to get disposed of by law. If there's any case that has no activity for 12 consecutive months, we have to send notices to all the parties as well as the attorneys to say, hey, if you don't respond within X amount of time, these are going to be dismissed. We are also trying to help 4th Division after we finish our division, but you can see that in 1st Division, we had a total of 2,410 filings just in in 2023 to date. So that's just to kind of give you an idea of how much work he's been doing on top of the work that he does for prepping orders, doing legal research, and things of that nature. That was just something to show y'all. The last thing in your packet is the salary survey. And I gave one of y'all my packet. One of y'all have a post-it note on yours somewhere? Okay, well, I had a post-it note. Anyhow, the last one is the salary survey. And so what I did, because not everybody has a law clerk, Second Division does have a law clerk. However, their law clerk makes, I think it's around $42,000. The reason I put their assistant salary on here is because I thought that would be more consistent with what my law clerk is actually doing. So Second Division has a chief of staff making $62,000 and their office supervisor making $52,000. Then when we look at the assistants in the other courts as well, they're making $52,000. The law clerk is a licensed attorney and he's making way less than this. So what I also did is I did a salary survey just in Faulkner County for licensed attorneys that are paid by Faulkner County. Obviously, our county attorney makes a lot more, so I don't know if it's necessarily fair to include that one in here. However, it is a licensed attorney paid by Faulkner County, so I wanted to make sure that I did that. A deputy prosecuting attorney who works full-time as well, just like my law clerk, is making $65,000. And a public defender who's working part-time is making $42,000. So the law clerk in my division at this point is making $2,500 more working a full-time position than what the county is paying someone who is working a part-time position. The Pulaski County law clerk position starts at $71,499. That's where I got the number from of what I'm requesting is because, one, they've got the law clerk positions down there to show the case numbers between what they've got and the work those judges are doing and then their offices are doing are comparable to what our offices are doing. I do not have, I said, Judge Braswell's on that salary survey because my understanding after talking with his chief of staff is his law clerk is not required to be a licensed attorney. I'm going to require mine to be a licensed attorney. What I hope to do is find someone that wants to come to Faulkner County, work in Faulkner County, stay in Faulkner County, make a career in Faulkner County. When you get these numbers low for the licensed attorneys, there's going to be a lot of turnover, and that means they're going to come in for a year or two, then they're going to leave and go to a higher-paying job. As you can see, the difference between what he's making here and Faulkner County, which is $44,600, and they're getting paid $71,499. In Pulaski County, 30 minutes down the road, doing the same caseload. Was that clear? Also, my law clerk is here, Ryan Joyner. He is the one that I'm here asking on his behalf, so I'm working with laid eyes on him before. I know you'll probably heard me talk about him, but Mr. Joyner is here. Any questions?
Thank you, Judge. Okay. Committee, do you have any questions? I guess just a note here, committee, and I'm sure you'll probably remember this from last year. 3rd and 5th Division, we did give those law clerks raises. As I did some research on this and looked around, as Judge Weaver said, her law clerk is a licensed attorney, but in the job description, that is not necessarily a requirement, so that's just a note of info. And these are the vast majority of these. Judge Braswell's law clerk is paid less than those others, as she noted, even though it's not on here. So.
It is in my... Page 2, the required skills of my law clerk, it's number 1, licensed attorney. Okay. Second page. Sorry.
Thank you, Judge.
No? Okay. I was like, oh, gosh, don't have that in there.
Could you elaborate a little bit on the benefits of having a licensed attorney there versus not having a licensed attorney in that position? How does that help you make your job easier, dispose of more case? I mean, can you give us some idea? I'm just asking this.
It's just a big jump. It's a big jump, right?
Yes,
so
it's a good question. A licensed attorney, a couple different things. One, if they're not licensed, that probably means either they've not passed the bar exam and have not been able to obtain their license, or they're in the process of studying for the bar exam, which means they're going to be stretching between trying to study for the bar exam and work for me at the same time. And I want somebody whose focus is going to be on this job and not just come in and learn it. I mean, I can get somebody in here and I can train them how to do simple orders or continuances and simple things like that. If they're very good at research, they can help me do some legal research and writing. But my goal is to get them in here and to know the system, just know it as good as like Margaret knows hers and her deputies know their systems. I don't want to get them in here rotating them out, which I could do, and I could do it less. But how much time am I going to be spending training these folks, trying to, you know, 3 months to 6 months training them when they're going to go down the road and make that much more money doing the exact same job?
Yes,
so
ma'am.
It does not have to be a licensed attorney. I just won't have them in that position as long. I want to make this a career job.
Okay. Thank you.
And Justice Ellis, and typically what we've seen in the past, as you've probably seen in these, is each judge has the own, they have their own way of handling law clerks. Some of them hire new ones that are studying for the bar. Some of them aren't licensed. So it's really up to the discretion of the judge on that.
Right. The two of the ones don't even require any type of.
Right.
But yeah, I do a lot of civil work in my docket's heavy, heavy, heavy civil, which requires a lot of reading and research. And I would spend probably as much time reading motions and reading the law as I will in court versus when I say this coming from a background of criminal law for almost 19 years in some sort of capacity. My law clerk makes fun of me because I always say this. It's different, the work that you do for civil versus the work you do for other types of cases. It's just different. But kind of like Judge Braswell's numbers look low compared to some of our others, but Judge Braswell's cases have to have multiple hearings. So where he may have this many cases, like I'm just making a number, 1,000 cases, those 1,000 cases may have to have 5 hearings, or I may have 5,000 cases, but they only need 2 hearings. Does that make sense? So it's kind of a one of those situations. It's a little confusing, but.
Thank you.
So just to clarify, would you say that having a licensed attorney in this position is going to help you dispose of more cases more quickly, make the court more efficient altogether?
Absolutely it will, because right now I've got to go to a conference. Ryan's assignment while I'm gone, I have 3 cases, what's called under advisement. I'm going to do some legal research, but I've got to also be on 2 committee meetings and some other meetings. And his job while I'm gone is to not only check any proposed motions and orders that come through, but his job is also to look at all those motions, research the law, and get me an email so when I get back on Monday, I have an idea of what he's looking at and what he's saying that the law is.
Thank you, Judge. Justice Allison, if I can, law school does a poor job of teaching young future attorneys to be attorneys. It teaches them how to think. So actually having a licensed attorney is somebody who is able to actually figure out what a complaint is, what a summons is, and do the actual research and just purely the theory that they learned in law school.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Allison. Does any of the other committee members have any questions? Go ahead, Justice Pearson.
I have a question for the Secretary. What's the revenue stream for this position? I see 1,000 and a bunch of numbers. Is that?
Well, 1,0401 would be the stream, and the 0111 is the position number, but it would, when it goes into the budget, it would also appropriate money to the line item 1001, not to be confused with what this is saying, though. Does that make sense?
So where's this funded out of?
County General.
Gotcha. Okay, well, that's a question for Budget and Finance, I guess. Thank you.
Thank you, Joseph. Any other committee members have any questions? Okay. Any of our JPs in the audience have a question? Any from the public have a question? Okay. Thank you, Judge. Okay, I will take a motion to forward 2309 to Budget and Finance for consideration.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. Resolution 28309 is forwarded to Budget and Finance. Okay. That concludes our resolutions for the salary surveys and all the positions. So we'll move into our ordinances. The first proposed ordinance we have is 23-31 for the electronic policy. I'll take a motion to put 23-31 on the table for discussion.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Counselor, if you can give an overview of this and the proposed changes on the electronic policy for us.
Yes, sir. So we already have a electronics policy as part of our personnel manual, but the state legislature passed a new statute, and that's 25-1-128. It's there in Section A. Basically, the state is mandating cities and counties update their policies. So the policy that we have before you is primarily an AAC recommendation that uses that statute as a blueprint. We've additionally kept some of our language in there just to supplement the AAC policy. So essentially everything that you see in red, either the strike through or the new, is what AAC is recommending. And then what's in black is what was already in our policy that we recommend that the county keep. So this is essentially telling county employees what we've already told them, which is electronic resources such as your phone, your laptop are to be used for work purposes and not for political purposes, not to be used for things outside of work. And that if you engage in those activities that are prohibited, that you can be disciplined, including up to losing your job.
Thank you, Counselor. Is there anything that the committee and the other JPs, is there something that really stands out as far as change-wise from our previous policy that we can see exit out to this new language that we should take note of?
There's nothing in particular that stands out. You can go through, but it says almost the same thing that our form policy says. We're just simply trying to keep up with the state standard, and this is the exact language I think that legislative audit is going to be familiar with when they come and review our policy. And so rather than argue with them that our policy was sufficient enough, we think that it's best to go ahead and adopt the same policy that many of our brother and sister counties are adopting.
Very good. Thank you, Counselor. Does the committee have any questions on 2331? Go ahead.
Can you share any insight as to what Arkansas Code 25-1-128 changed, or what its purpose or legislative intent was?
My understanding is there's been a huge fear of two things. One, of outside entities hacking county servers and county or municipal. And so there was a big push on one side in the legislature in this last session to implement a program to kind of prevent hacking and make sure that cities and counties were doing enough to, there was a county, I hate to throw anyone in, but maybe it was a city. Someone was hacked and had the ransomware issue, or maybe it was a school district. I think that's what it was. There was a school district that was hacked, and so that became a big issue in the legislature. I think this is a byproduct of that. So that's that, not the hacking, but they wanted to make sure that all electronics were safe, and part of being safe is that employees aren't going to be going on, I'm sorry, I can't think of a good Napster, if you will, all right, downloading items that they shouldn't download on their company products.
Right.
And so I think this is just a byproduct of that fear.
The language that jumps out at me is this, you know, Section 3, Item A, expressing a personal political opinion to an elected official unless the opinion is within the scope of the employee's regular job duties or requested by an elected official. Is that new language? Was that in the code previously? That kind of jumps out at me as something odd.
Well, when we used it was in the code, was it in the personnel manual? I think we do have language in our personnel manual that limits political language to some degree, but certainly, I mean, it is kind of a furtherance of limiting that political activity. We have a number of different ordinances and a number of different pieces of our personnel manual that reference that, even so far as putting magnets on our cars and signs on the cars. And so this is just another way to try and limit the employee's use of county taxpayer equipment to make a potentially political statement.
Fair. Thank you.
Any of the other committee members have any questions? Any of the JPs in the audience? Go ahead, Justice Austin.
The personnel manual is not applicable to elected officials in this county, is that correct?
That's correct.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Any questions from the public?
Mr. Chairman, just
go ahead.
Justice. Looked up in the county personnel manual. If this is the current version I'm looking at. It says on there right now that employees are prohibited while on duty or in uniform from making political endorsements or expressing favoritism toward a political issue or candidate. So I guess this may be taken a little bit farther than that, but it's pretty much in there already. Just didn't limit it to or put it on the technology, I guess.
Thank you, Justice Allison. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Go ahead, Justice Allison.
One more question. The county's technology resources shall not be used to engage in lobbying an elected official on a personal opinion if the employee is not a registered lobbyist for the public. All right, I think I just answered my question. And I wanted to ensure that we didn't put people who weren't elected officials, such as our county administrator, in a position where they cannot work on behalf of the county, where they cannot lobby on behalf of the county, other elected officials, but it plainly says in here, on a personal opinion.
Okay.
So I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Sure thing. Any other questions, comments? Okay. I will take a motion to forward proposed ordinance 23-31 to the full court.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. Ordinance 23-31 is forwarded to the full court. Okay, our next proposed ordinance is 23-32. I take a motion to put it on the table for discussion.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Ordinance 23-32, Counselor, you can give us an overview of this one too, please.
I'll go ahead and defer to County Administrator Higgins.
Okay. Sorry about that. County Administrator Higgins, if you would give us an overview.
So there are two issues on 23-32. The first is in Section 1. You can see in the red lettering there, the bottom sentence, a gratuity for services may be reimbursed in an amount no greater than 15%. The meal price gratuity is clearly identified. Here's the issue that we have come across, and this is feedback from the elected officials, from employees. When they go to, say, an AAC meeting, or they go to a various meeting and they buy a meal, up to this point, gratuity is not reimbursable. So they pull out the county credit card to pay for the meal for county business, but they have to pay for the gratuity separate on a separate credit card, or maybe pull out the cash for your thing. So what this is for their ability to be able to actually use gratuity up to a certain limit, 15% here, and to be able to pay for that as part of county expenses.
Okay.
So that's item number one.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Item number two, you'll see in Section 4, any official. Sorry, my microphone wasn't on. Shame on me. Any elected official utilizing a private motor vehicle. So this is for the reimbursement rate is what this is. Currently, it is set at, if you'll look in the striked out section above, 42 cents. We went back and looked. That was last changed. Maybe before I was even on the court, so maybe 10 years is the last time that was changed. And what we would like to do is actually to have it track what the state pays, which I believe is changed on a quarterly basis. I looked it up. The current rate is 52 cents, but it changes at that rate. That way, it'll be a legitimate rate based on the price of gas and follow what the state already pays their employees. Okay. That's what that is.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Does the committee have any questions?
I just have one question. Is it clear in the language of Section 4? To me, it just says, but you know, a rate decided by the Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration. But it's not really spelling out exactly where they're listing that information, or, you know, because it could, you could read that and say, well, they decided for Farmer County it's 10 cents a mile, or just whatever. There's no clear language that spells out where that decision is made, where that information is listed. You know what I'm saying?
No, I understand, and so I didn't think of it that way, but I actually looked it up today, because I figured the first question would ask me, well, what's the rate at? And I went to the Arkansas Department of Finance Administration, looked up and looked up mileage reimbursement rate, and it popped up, and it was right there. So they changed it. A lot of agencies look at that so they can fund. So, you know, I don't know if we could, counselor, clean that language up, but I'm just saying, when we were looking at it, it seemed pretty self-evident, well, tracking.
I just know, I mean, I think a federal rate is like 65 cents.
It is, and we looked at that. It's actually 65.5 currently.
Right.
In our discussion, we actually thought that was a little excessive. So we decided to track the state rate the same as state employees.
Right, right. I just mean, would it be helpful to have some type of language that spells out, you know, that it's a rate decided by the Arkansas Department of Finance Administration pursuant, you know, for other state agencies or for state, you know, because I'm guessing that DFNA is making that recommendation for state agencies.
So you think about it, on the federal level, they're doing averages across the country, which would include California,
sure,
which their fuel rates are $1, $1.50 more than Arkansas, whereas this would give you an average rate for the state of Arkansas.
Right. I guess my point is it doesn't spell out clearly. It's just a language thing, right? It just doesn't spell out clearly to me that that this is a reimbursement rate decided by the Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration for state agencies, or, you know, I don't know. It may be excessive. It may be unnecessary. It just is a language thing. Don't like to leave any ambiguity. If we can take it out, that's my only suggestion or question.
Justice Pearson, if you like, in the latest, or one of the latest memorandums, DFNA uses the term, due to the increase in gas prices, the maximum authorized state rate of mileage reimbursement. It's the term that they use for the use of privately owned motor vehicles and the compensation rate. So if you want, we could potentially add there in that first sentence, any official employee utilizing privately owned motor vehicle in the conduct of county affairs may be reimbursed the maximum authorized state rate of mileage reimbursement decided by the Arkansas Department of Finance.
And the most recent, too, to put a timeline on it, too.
Okay.
I would like to see language like that in there, personally, and then something that gives it a timeliness clause also that says that it's the most recent one, because right now that's not in there either. It's just, you know, somebody could read that and say, well, this is last year's, let's use that, but no, you should use the most current one. So those are my only 2 points of concern, and I would like to see that language change if other members on the committee agree.
Is that a motion?
Do we have a suggestion for a way to phrase the language? I think the counselor's scribbling something out there for me, so I am prepared to make that motion, though, get a little help on some language.
So it would say, any official or employee utilizing a privately owned motor vehicle in the conduct of county affairs may be reimbursed at the most recent and the maximum authorized state rate of mileage reimbursement, leave that rate there, decided by the Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration.
Yes, I'd like to make a motion to amend Section 4 of Ordinance 2332 to add that language.
We've got a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Any discussion from the committee on that motion? I guess a question. Counselor?
I guess I
go
do.
Ahead, Justice Strang.
I don't know. I don't think that it's necessary personally that we tie it to the state. I think if the administration and the quorum court decide that they want to choose that amount, then it's going to be up to the court and the administration to change that. I think if we tie it to what the state does, then they might do something that we don't agree with, and we'd kind of be stuck with that. With that kind of language, so I would really prefer to leave it the way it is, so that if the administration, if the quorum court feels like it needs to be changed, it would still go through the quorum court.
Okay, thank you for that. Justice Strain. Counselor, I guess I have a question for you. Do you feel comfortable with this language, changing it on the fly, that it aligns and we're good with the state?
I think we're good.
Okay. Any other discussion from the committee?
Just suggesting, addressing Justice Strain's concern. It's already tied in the language before the motion to the State Department of Finance Administration, just not explicitly the most recent and where to find it. And I personally feel like maybe we need more guidance. I mean, we don't want a court later on to come up and say we're going to reimburse them at $50 a mile or something like that. That could happen. I think tied to the state has a lot of resources and puts a lot of thought into calculating that rate, and they're updating it, like County Administrator Higgins said, quarterly. It'd be more current, more up-to-date, more appropriate, I think. And I don't know that this court would have the resources or the time to update it and keep it on track. That's just my opinion.
Thank you, Justice Allison.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
If I can interject, one thing I'd like to take into consideration, I can appreciate the concern about the state deciding they wanted to pay $50 a mile or something. I think the catch to that would be we in the executive branch are monitoring our budgets. If it went to $50, we would be the first to come in here saying state has lost their mind and we don't want to go to $50. We can't afford it in our budgets, and we would make the appropriate recommendations at that time.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Just to clarify, I didn't mean the state would do that. I meant that a future court may, or a future administration may, and not that y'all would, but just to keep control of what might happen.
Okay. Any other questions, discussion from the committee? Any from the JPs in the audience on this motion? Okay. Motion, let's take a vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
The ayes have it. The motion is accepted. Back to the ordinance itself. Any questions from the committee on the amended ordinance? Anything from the justices in the audience? Anything from the public? Okay. Counselor, just to clarify, can you read that verbiage one more time with the amended ordinance that we're looking at, and then we'll take a vote on it?
Sure. It'll be in Section 4, and it's now revised to state, any official or employee utilizing a privately owned motor vehicle in the conduct of county affairs may be reimbursed at the most recent and maximum authorized state rate of mileage reimbursement as decided by the Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration.
Thank you, Counselor. Okay, I will take a motion to send Proposed Ordinance 23-32 to the full court.
Make a motion.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. 23-32 is forwarded to the full court. And the last of our proposed ordinances is 23-33 on the bereavement leave. I'll take a motion to put that on the floor for discussion.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Administrator Higgins, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if you look in Section A and Section B, we're adding the language, and I'll just have the leave with pay of up to 3 days may be taken. This is regarding bereavement leave. The added language is with the approval of the supervising elected official in both those. And the background on this is up to this point, bereavement was not really approved by the elected official. So we received feedback from a number of the elected officials in here that they would like to have some language in there for unique situations. So for example, let's just fact, we're running a business here. We're running county business. And so on occasion, there may be a bereavement situation where a number of people want to take off. Could be someone's cousin, could be someone's son-in-law, it could be a number of different people that are involved, and offices oftentimes can't just shut down. And so an elected official needs to make a hard decision sometimes and help work through this. And it's not that we don't want people to be able to take bereavement time in their full bereavement time, but an elected official needs the opportunity to be able to manage their office and say, I need to help manage this because we have a number of people wanting to take off you know, the full 3 days for this particular death in the family. Can we work this out? And at least the opportunity to negotiate. Without this in here, really, an elected official doesn't even have the opportunity to negotiate. Those people are just gone.
Thank you, sir. Does the committee have any questions over this?
Go ahead. Is that not what sick time is for?
Our bereavement is separate from our sick time.
Yes, bereavement is separate from the sick time.
In Section C, you see that they can use sick leave for bereavement at times, but the problem here is that bereavement, if it falls within one of those specified family members, they're given an additional 3 days. 3 days to use.
It's kind of broad to me. It says the death of an employee's relative.
So in the personnel manual, and I'm with you, Justice Shaw, because I like, what is a relative? So actually, in the personnel manual, it defines what a relative is. And I'll just go through it real quick with your permission, Mr.
Yes, sir.
Chair. Relative in the definitions of the policy manual is husband, wife, mother, father, stepmother, stepfather, mother-in-law, father-in-law, brother, sister, stepbrother, stepsister, half-brother, half-sister, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, daughter, son, stepdaughter, stepson, daughter-in-law, son-in-law, uncle, aunt, first cousin, nephew, niece, grandparents, granddaughter, and grandson.
Thank you, Administrator Higgins.
Okay.
Does that answer your question, Justice Shaw? Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Any questions from the JPs in the audience? Justice Lahosky?
I have two, if you'll entertain me.
Go ahead.
In the long list that you just listed off, would you include great-grandparents or great-granddaughters in that definition?
I did not see that in the definition. If I didn't read it, it wasn't there.
Okay. I just didn't know if they fell under the definition of a grandparent, a great-grandparent, because people are living longer these days. You know, that's just a thought that I had.
And the feedback that I would have for you is that would be a separate amendment to the policy procedure manual that the personnel manual could take up, but that's not what we're addressing in this ordinance.
Another thing that the ordinance is addressing, I'm not asking definitely for a motion or anything like that, bereavement leave not used at the time of death cannot be used at a later date. We've had a situation in my own family where we've had a grandparent die, and because of COVID or because of they donated their body to science or something like that, we had to wait like a month or two until we could schedule a memorial service when we had out-of-state family come in and stuff like that. That's just a consideration and a thought that I have. I don't think there's any comment or anything.
I can give some feedback to that. So I think the consideration that you're talking about, Justin Lowski, is legitimate because that is still bereavement. I think the intent of this is, I didn't get to take my 3 days, and so I'm just going to take 2 days, and can I take another one when I get fishing box? So I think that's good, but when somebody passes and there's the immediate needs of the family, and then the services are a month or 2 months, maybe because of family considerations, that is still part of the bereavement process.
Thank you, Justice Lahosky. I think those are fair points, but I think they're outside of the scope of this ordinance and maybe potential discussion for future changes to the policy. Go ahead, Justice Pierce.
Minister Higgins, I'm having a hard time squaring your justification for the need for the change with what is proposed here. Unless everybody in an office is related, how is everybody going to be taking bereavement leave at the same time?
Counselor, we talked about this. Maybe I'll defer to the counselor.
Let me give another scenario that I think could be more appropriate, and that is here in a week, our tax collector has probably her busiest week of collecting taxes. The taxes are due October 10th, is that right?
16th.
I was off. Wait. October 16th. Everybody, you know, is busy right now collecting taxes. Well, part of the problem is you need all hands on deck to collect taxes. And potentially, if somebody's first cousin passes, it makes sense maybe to let that person have a day off to go to Enders to bury their loved one. But maybe when it's crunch time and you have other issues and a very limited staff, you need everybody to be available. Maybe if you're the sheriff and you have specific issues within the detention center and you know that you need staff and you're short staffed, you just don't have the ability to hire someone off the street to come in. You need to have that flexibility to say, yes, I understand you recently had the loss of a loved one, and I want to work with you on this, but can you come in after 2 days, and can you work a shift for me? So this just allows the flexibility for that supervising official to work with them, and it still allows them to have additional sick leave or additional bereavement time using sick leave or vacation leave. It just gives the elected official some flexibility so that an employee can't simply say, I hereby declare whatever, someone has passed away in my family and I want my 3 days off and then walk away.
I appreciate the additional explanation. I'm personally still not convinced that this is really necessary. I don't think it's the county's business to get in the way of families dealing with grievances and losses, and to me this just creates a window of opportunity for him to do that, and I'm against the policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Pearson. Any other questions or comments from the committee?
Yeah, I'm in support of this because, I mean, most of the time when I've seen policies like this, it's always been an immediate family. So I think this is already quite permissible as far as when you list out that list of family members that are considered here. I've never heard of a policy where uncles, aunts, first cousins were considered immediate family. So I think that it's already offering this leave to employees for a broader spectrum of relatives than most policies would. And I think that I agree with the concerns of Mr. Higgins and County Attorney Murphy that elected officials need something, they need that flexibility to keep people on staff in time, like you said, crunch time.
Thank you, Justice Allison.
Mr. Chair, if I make one follow-up comment, and I appreciate
yes, sir.
Justice Pearson's feedback on that. Let me just share a little bit of experience in the corporate world. We had what we called speed bumps in very similar situations where a supervising manager would at least be brought into this because we had open policies that if you had a death based on those listed, it was 3 days off. And that included your stepbrother in California that you haven't seen in 30 years. Hey, he died. I'm taking 3 days off. And so the managers in the corporate world, we would look at these situations like, you know, come on now, let's talk about this a little bit. I'm not saying that that's an issue at the county level, but it does allow a little bit just of a speed bump. And I think any compassionate leader in our elected officials are definitely that want to work with these. But I'll just reiterate, we do run a business.
Thank you, Administrator Higgins. Committee, have any more questions? JP's in the audience, have any questions? Does anybody in the audience? Okay, thank you, sir. I will take a motion to forward ordinance 23-33 to the full court.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
We got a motion and a second. All those in favor of sending ordinance 23-33 to the full court, say aye.
Aye.
Let's do a voice vote.
Tyler Pearson.
No.
Shock.
No.
Strain.
Yes.
Allison.
Yes.
Chair.
Yes. And based on that, the motion is forwarded, and that ordinance 23-33 is forwarded to the full court. Is there anything else? That's all we have on our list. Is there any announcements that any on the committee have? Okay. On that, we're adjourned. Thank you, everybody.